Hey, Unnaturalists, I'm Andy.
And I'm Ryan.
And welcome back to Unnatural. I feel like I'm definitely talking to the right person today because you are somebody who you've studied psychology and you have a lot of opinions on emotions and what emotions can mean, right? I think that's safe to say. All of a sudden, she's timid.
I am really curious about where you're going with this. So I'm like, okay, what's the drum roll?
Well, let's talk about jealousy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ick.
Jealousy can be a fickle emotion to deal with. It can make a person say something that they instantly regret. It can make a person do things that they never considered doing up until that point. And it can also take a person down a dark, twisted path of vengeance and retribution. I'm not saying that to you. I don't think you've ever done it.
I've thought it.
Yeah. Well, and for me, jealousy, I don't know. It seems like it's something that was bigger in my life when I was younger than it is.
It's one of the seven deadly sins.
It is. And this certainly got deadly. This episode is all about jealousy and its ramifications. And it begins with the discovery of a body. The town of Greeley is kind of a mid-sized city in northern Colorado, around an hour north of Denver. And 53-year-old Scott Sessions spent most of his life in Greeley, and he was an accomplished jazz musician there. And that is probably an understatement, Ryan, because this guy toured all over the United States, even abroad, and he dazzled audiences with his unique style of trumpet playing. I even saw some YouTube clips of this guy. Amazing trumpet player. On February 10th of 2020, Scott failed to show up for a sold-out gig. The gig was at the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse in the nearby suburb of Johnstown. This immediately raised concerns, as Scott Sessions never missed a chance to perform in front of anyone, and he was widely known as Mr. Reliable when it came to musicians for hire around the area. One of his bandmates would later say that at that moment, quote, "in the back of my mind, I had a bad feeling," end quote. And Scott's father, Stan, had a bad feeling too. After not hearing from him, Stan reported Scott missing the next morning. And sadly, it didn't take long before Stan was given the devastating news that his son's body had been found near Poudre Canyon by a local snowplow driver. But it was almost immediately known that Scott's death wasn't some random accident, as his body had been unmistakably and intentionally burned, wrapped in plastic, and covered in duct tape. You see, the snowplow driver had seen a smoldering fire on a hill about 40 feet from the road. When he went to investigate, he found the body partially burned in the charred remains. Additionally, an autopsy would later show that Scott's throat was also slit so violently that he was nearly decapitated.
Oh my God.
I mean, that has to be pretty carnal.
That's some
pretty brutal.
Rage.
Yeah. Judging by the way he was murdered, like you said, this was clearly a crime of rage. And also a crime of jealousy. But who would kill this beloved musician and why? Scott's family and friends were at a loss, and so were investigators, until they took a peek at his cell phone. This is the story of the double murders of Greeley, Colorado. Though Scott had no kids of his own, he left an undeniable mark on the world. His siblings and his nieces and nephews, along with his parents, were obviously devastated by the news, but so was the local community. People couldn't believe that a guy like Scott could have made any enemies whatsoever because he was just the nicest guy you ever met. And like I said, Ryan, investigators were initially dumbfounded. They first searched Scott's home, hoping to find some sort of clue or a lead that would point them in the direction of the would-be killer, but nothing. And next, they had special investigators analyze the data on his cell phone. Not only would this show who Scott had been communicating with and what they were saying, but it also would provide some key insights into where he had been traveling. We've seen this in previous cases where a cell phone will ping a tower, and that can very well be the evidence that breaks a case wide open. You would think that these would-be criminals would turn their cell phones off when they're committing these crimes, but apparently not. I don't get it.
I must stay connected right. At all cost.
As it turns out, Scott's cell phone revealed a treasure trove of information, including the last tower ping, which happened about 3 miles from his home. Police went looking in that general area, kind of canvassing. They were using small search parties and even canine units. And eventually, they found Scott's car in the parking lot of a grocery store. So they found the body, and then they find the car. So things are progressing along. But oddly enough, the keys remained in the ignition. Kind of weird.
Okay.
Something else weird. The car's driver's side floor mat was underneath the vehicle. And upon reviewing footage from nearby security cameras, authorities also observed an individual exiting the driver's side, circling the car, and eventually departing on foot. That's according to the Weld County's chief deputy district attorney, Steve Wren. And perhaps the most crucial part of this find, Ryan, was that when this took place, it was dated the day following the discovery of Scott Sessions' body.
So they ditched the car after they found
him. Yes. So this ruled him out as a driver. When I was first researching this case, I was thinking, okay, maybe he ditched his car for some reason. But no, this was after he was already murdered.
But why is the floor mat under the car?
That might be something we never figure out. But
it's gonna haunt me.
I know, and I was thinking that too.
Why would they do that?
But there's an even bigger breakthrough in the investigation that occurred when investigators managed to access Scott Sessions' Facebook Messenger account. And boy, did they find a lot on that Facebook Messenger, Ryan.
I bet.
They would be so bored if they looked at my Facebook Messenger. I mean,
just you and me talking about Sunday mornings.
Yeah, most of them are me and you talking to each other saying, hey, when are we going to record? Luckily, the investigators found Scott's Facebook password, along with all of his other online passwords written down on a piece of paper inside his house. If they hadn't found that, it's possible that the case wouldn't have led them in this direction. But thankfully they did, because until they checked his messenger, they had no idea of his connection to another key individual in this case.
Oh, shit.
Her name was Heather Frank. And one of the detectives recounted, quote, Scott was engaged in a Facebook Messenger conversation with Heather Frank. That identified a pivotal connection. Because Heather was a local waitress who Scott had recently encountered and was casually dating. And she emerges as kind of a central figure here. So police are kind of scouring the messages that they see on Facebook between the two of them. And it was pretty clear that Scott was very smitten with Heather. And by all indications, the feelings were reciprocated on her end as well. They had only been dating a short time, it sounds like, but it was long enough for Scott's friend to notice that he had a new lady in his life. His bandmate Eddie had recently seen the two together and told investigators, quote, "It appeared she was very taken with Scott. She was a very beautiful woman, and I remember the look on her face when she was watching Scott perform," end quote. Just reading about her, Heather Frank sounds like a pretty remarkable woman. She was a 48-year-old mother of three amazing sons, Alexander and twins Christian and Blake. And while she loved all of her boys unequivocally, it sounds like she had a deep bond with her oldest son, Alex. And the two were inseparable and best friends. I love it when I see a parent and a kid become genuinely great friends outside of just being the parents and the kid, like after the kid turns 18 and moves out. I don't know why. I just love that because that doesn't always happen.
Yeah. After they move out and they're adults. Yes, I agree.
Heather was a pretty cool gal, as I was mentioning. She was stylish and fun-loving. She enjoyed doing crafts. And she also enjoyed sewing and crocheting, which is funny because that's what you're doing right now.
Yes. Yes, I am. Not well, but yes.
So I feel like you would get along with Heather.
She sounds like we'd have a good time.
Well, and just like you, Heather loved music. And it was that love of music that drew her to Scott Sessions in the first place. According to the Facebook messages, Scott and Heather last communicated with each other on February 8th. That's 2 days before Scott failed to show up for that gig. The two of them planned to meet up later that night at her apartment, and police eventually came to the realization that Scott's phone must have either died or been shut off sometime while he was at her place, sometime in the early hours of February 9th. So this was when investigators kind of honed in, so to speak, on Heather. Clearly, she was one of the last people, if not the last person, to see Scott alive, and she could be the key into finding out who his assailant was. As police began to look into her history, they noticed baggage. The baggage, Ryan, that only an ex can bring.
Me sipping on my tea. Bring it, baby.
They noticed that she had been in an on-again, off-again relationship with a guy by the name of Kevin Eastman. This was going on for close to 7 years. And the one word a person could use to describe this relationship would probably be tumultuous, which is not a good word to use for a relationship, I would say. After looking through several background checks, police found multiple reports of domestic abuse. Kevin had pleaded guilty a few years before to a misdemeanor assault charge against Heather. It sounds like it was one of those situations where Heather kept attempting to get away, but Kevin had a really tight grip on her. One of her friends even said that he had proposed to her at least 3 or 4 times, but she rejected all of them. But the harder she tried to get away from him, the harder he fought to keep her with him.
I have lived that story.
Yeah.
Not quite as intense as this. Obviously, I'm alive.
Right. But it is a common occurrence. It's something.
Yeah, it's really common.
We see a lot in this day and age.
And what the hell is that? That level of possessiveness over a human being person.
I think, and we've kind of talked about that before. I feel like some guys, their testosterone just goes into overload and they don't know how to deal with it.
Emotional IQ. I don't understand.
Right.
I mean, clearly we're not learning how to talk about our feelings.
Well, and let's face it, they probably weren't raised in the best upbringing. And
exactly. Yeah, right.
They probably didn't have a solid fatherly figure themselves. And the cycle just continues. And that's mm-hmm. probably what happened with Kevin. It also came to light that about 10 months before, Heather had been confined to a hospital bed in Denver, and she told law enforcement officers about the horrifying ordeal with Kevin as she had been assaulted by him. Ryan, body camera footage from the police officers, they had their body cameras on them at the time, and it captured Heather's really desperate pleas to the officers to intervene. She was asking for an intervention, and she expressed her fear that the violence was going to continue if they didn't do something. And she said, quote, "Did he just get away again like he always fucking does? This isn't the first time he's done this to me," end quote. And the police officers assured Heather that they were approaching this matter with urgency and to trust the legal process. But despite what they said, Kevin Eastman evaded arrest. And although a warrant for Kevin's apprehension had been issued, it was later reported that it remained unfulfilled, leaving lingering questions about the handling of the case. Really sad to see, especially knowing what ended up happening here.
It's just heartbreaking. That shit happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Police obtained subpoenas for the cell phone records of both Heather Frank and Kevin Eastman, as it was revealed that both of them were in the apartment alongside Scott Sessions. Moreover, investigators discovered that shortly after Scott Sessions' cell phone turned off or went dead, the cell phones belonging to Heather and Kevin pinged towers near Poudre Canyon, the very same place where Scott Sessions' body was later found. Coincidence? I think not. Surveillance cameras positioned outside an amphitheater captured footage of Kevin Eastman's vehicle going up the canyon and then back down about 3 hours later. Also, cell phone data indicated that Kevin Eastman and Heather Frank had returned to her apartment following their excursion to the canyon. This was a big break in the case, Ryan. They pinpointed both Kevin and Heather's cell phones with Scott Sessions' body. Police then issued warrants for both of their arrests. Kevin Eastman was picked up while he was pouring gasoline into a carrying can at a local station. However, when authorities went to Heather's house, they couldn't find her. But you know what they did find? A significant pool of blood seeping through the door outside Heather's apartment. Things had just taken a wild turn. Initially, I think it's safe to say that investigators were maybe under the assumption that Kevin Eastman and Heather Frank had worked in concert with each other to kill Scott Sessions. Now, Heather was missing. She wasn't answering her phone, and they found a large pool of blood in her apartment. They found the blood, but they hadn't found a body. So, while one group of police were discovering the blood and following all leads on Heather's whereabouts, another group of investigators was questioning Kevin Eastman down at the precinct. And to say that Kevin's interrogation was bizarre, Ryan, is an understatement. Safe to say, this was a long-ass interrogation. He was there for hours and hours. And at first, police were kind of buddy-buddy with him, and he was in complete denial of knowing anything. But they did start to chip away, and eventually, he made his first big mistake. As he was describing the relationship between Heather and Scott, he said, quote, "I feel bad speaking ill of the dead, because that's not very polite," end quote. But, and it sounds like you're picking up on this, at that point in the investigation, Ryan, the police had not yet revealed to Kevin Eastman that Scott Sessions was dead.
Fucking ratted himself out. I love it when they do that.
Yep. And they did that on purpose. They only told him at that point that he was a missing person. And Kevin backtracked immediately and said, "Oh, I swore I saw a title of an article in a newspaper that read, quote, homicide victim, end quote." But again, that information had not been released to the public yet. And for good reason, like you said, they wanted to see if they could get Kevin Eastman to slip up. And that's exactly what happened.
Very nice.
I know.
I love that.
Sweet.
Yeah, chef's kiss.
Sweet vengeance there. This was when the police kind of alternated here. They were doing the whole good cop, bad cop thing that you've probably seen in the movies before. They start asking Kevin if he was covering for Heather, saying, "Did Heather kill Scott Sessions and ask you to help her get rid of his body?" And being the devoted and loyal man you are, did you just help her out of this jam? They then used Kevin's jealousy over Heather's relationship with Scott to their advantage. This was good police work here. They said,
"Oh, now they're doing their job."
They are, though. And they said in the interrogation, quote, "Hey, Heather maybe made a bad mistake, but that doesn't mean that mistake needs to be yours too," end quote. And they go on to say, quote, "Scott was not a good guy. To him, Heather was just another conquest, nothing more. You've tried to help Heather. You're the victim here," end quote. Now, in reality, there's nothing to assert that Scott was a bad guy, but you can see what they're doing here, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to build him up. And meanwhile, Kevin Eastman is breaking down, crying, saying, quote, "I don't want to hear it," end quote. They're clearly trying to make him out to be a hero in his own mind. And I got to say, that's some pretty savvy interrogation tactics to use. And Eastman went on to say, quote, "She told me she told him no, and he just kept going, and that he raped her," end quote. And again, there's no indication that Scott ever sexually assaulted Heather Frank. But Eastman was trying to make Scott the bad guy, and he insisted to officers that he told Heather he would not say anything about this to anyone. But what Kevin didn't know is that the police who were searching for Heather had just made a breakthrough. They found her body. So back at the precinct, Kevin continues to say that he didn't kill anybody, and whatever happened must have been so bad that he blocked it out of his memory. But the cops were like, "We know you were there. The evidence is irrefutable. We have your phone traced to Heather's apartment at the same time Scott showed up. We have you on surveillance heading to the canyon where Scott's body was dumped. We have security footage of you dropping Scott's car off in the supermarket parking lot. And then they drop the bombshell. They start saying, quote, "Where's Heather? You know where she is. Where is she?" End quote. His response, quote, "She's probably at work," end quote. They said, "She's not at work. She's not at home. Yet her car is home and there's blood everywhere." And that's when they tell him. They tell him they have found Heather and that Heather is in the same condition that Scott Sessions is in. They tell him, "Heather's dead and you need to start talking to us." And he answers in kind of a fake crying voice. He says, "Don't say that. That's mean of you to say that." It is not believable at all. I'll try and find the audio to play it because it's like, if you're trying to pull one over, you're not doing a very good job here.
I have no words.
Right. Well, on February 18th, police located Heather Frank's body on a Weld County property belonging to Kevin Eastman's employer, Troy Bonnell.
What an imbecile.
Just to get this out of the way, this Troy Bonnell had nothing to do with the murder.
Yeah.
Some people initially thought maybe he was an accomplice. He checked out fine. Kevin just knew that his property might be somewhere where he could dispose of the body. And her body was found in a burn pile. She had been shot twice in the chest at close range, and her body was in that same plastic bagging, plastic wrap, with the same duct tape around it as Scott Sessions. Her body wasn't burned yet, though. Ryan, do you remember how I told you they apprehended Kevin Eastman? He was at a gas station.
He was at a gas station. He was going back.
He was filling that large container with gasoline. What do you think he was going to do with that gasoline? Mm-hmm.
I wondered what the hell he was getting gas for.
Yep.
If he already burns, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Good. Ugh. And good. Really good thing they got him when they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep him talking. Keep looking for the body.
Because if he would have burned the body, they might not have found it. I think they probably still would have found the remains, but you never know.
Well, there's still important information on a body that if you catch it before it's being burned, there's 100%. They're trying to hide some shit. Mm-hmm. That's usually why they burn them. God damn it.
So they found her body. They figured out that Kevin was going to burn her. He's apprehended at the precinct trying to talk his way out of this. Well, Scott Sessions, it was determined, was likely ambushed as soon as he entered Heather's apartment, and he was attacked with a large knife. Again, his throat was slashed so violently that he was nearly beheaded. And like you said, that is some major rage. So my guess is, you know, Kevin was hiding behind a door or something, and as soon as Scott went in there, he just went after him. And
how did he know he was coming?
That was never determined. My guess is he had been stalking Heather, or maybe he beat it out of her that Scott was coming. But either way, he knew Scott was coming and waited for him there, killed him, and then it was said in court that Kevin forced Heather to accompany him to the site where he attempted to burn the body in Poudre Canyon. It was argued in court that he killed her a short time later because he believed she couldn't be trusted and that she would go to police as soon as he was out of her sight. Just tragic for Scott Sessions and for her. I mean, this Scott Sessions guy sounds like he's a great guy. He just was in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, him and Heather had just recently started a relationship, which by all accounts was going well. And this crazy ex gets involved. I've been in that situation before. Obviously I wasn't murdered, but I've been
really,
I've been the other guy who started dating someone and then the ex gets involved and I'll never forget, personally, I was at her place and somehow the ex found out that I was there and he was like outside banging on the door telling me to come out. It goes to show that when jealousy is involved and these guys feel like they own these women, that these women can't do anything outside of them.
Well, and what a miserable position to be in. All you want is to be happy. So you try to make it work with the psychopath because you're like, well, he won't let me be with anybody else.
Right.
And then you just have to deal with that over and over and over again, like a yo-yo.
Yeah. And that's what happened with her for 7 years. And it sounds like she had finally gotten free from him. She even moved to another town, and then he moved near that town to start working for this guy and tried to get close to her again, but she had shut him down, but he showed up.
And nobody was listening when she was asking for help.
Yeah, and the police could have put an end to it, but they didn't. And in July of 2022, Kevin Eastman was found guilty on 2 counts, each of first-degree murder. Also, tampering with a deceased human body and tampering with physical evidence in the February 2020 double homicide of Heather, Frank, and Scott Sessions. He was 50 years old at the time of his sentencing and was handed 2 life sentences without the possibility of parole, with an additional 27 years in prison. I like how they always tack on, you know, we're going to give you 2 life sentences plus 27 years just in case you're like this crazy exorcist type of demon that won't die. But at least in a sense, justice was served. I mean, you and I have already covered a number of cases where the killer's still out there and they know who it is, but they don't have enough evidence. Jealousy. We come back to jealousy. And Scott Sessions was killed out of jealousy. And then Heather Frank, days later, for being the sole witness to the previous murder. Kevin Eastman is currently serving out his sentences at the Colorado Department of Corrections. And I think I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up, Ryan. I've seen some people online say that they think that Heather had something to do with the first murder, the murder of Scott Sessions. I personally don't believe that. Now, there's a lot we don't know because she's dead.
Right.
But I think
it's all speculation, but the reality most likely is that she knew what Kevin was capable of.
Yeah.
And when you are afraid for your life, there's a lot of things that you'll do. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, your brain does not want to let you get killed. So survival mode kicks in. And even if she did have anything to do, whether it was just helping him carry the body or help, she did it because she didn't want to die.
Yeah.
That is the most likely. She knew she wasn't getting away from him. She moved. She was telling the police. She had nowhere else to go. And he was going to find her wherever she went. So she hoped that I'm sure that he dragged her along with, and she just hoped the whole time that she would make it out of that situation alive.
Yep. You said it way more eloquently than I could have. I agree with you. That's exactly what I think too. Unfortunately, there are people that don't believe that I think there's people that just look for stuff for whatever reason and, you know, trying to victim blame. And
oh my God. If you read any of the fucking comment section on a social media app, it's amazing what people will blame people for. And a lot of the times it's like, wow, I can see your trauma through your comment. Are you okay? God damn, you need some therapy, man.
That's why I can't even look at the comments. Like, Especially,
I am both appreciative and baffled at comment sections. Sometimes there are some videos you're like, I am running to the comments. I have to know what people are saying here. But then there are some that are really atrocious, and you're like, "What are you, keyboard warrior? What the fuck? What are you doing that is like fulfilling to you in life? Is this it?"
I swear that some of them are just trolling, and they don't even personally believe what they're saying. They just want to get people going.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Yeah, but a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on this case, and we want to know what you think. You can reach out to us on Instagram, Unnatural the Podcast. Find us on Facebook, Unnatural a True Crime Podcast, or send us an email, unnaturalthepodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to like, follow, rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And I was going to mention this next week. Next week, Emily is going to join us, and she is going to be here. We're having our 3-year anniversary special, Ryan.
Our 3-year threesome?
Yeah. So the threesome thing again.
Bringing it back.
But it's going to be an extra special episode. And because of that, we are going to throw something out there for our listeners. You ready for this? This is special. So if you take a screenshot and download all of our episodes and send it to us, that screenshot, we're going to do a few things. A, we're going to give you a shout out in a future episode. B, we are going to cover a case of your choosing, any case you want. And C, we're going to send you some unnatural swag.
I don't even have unnatural swag. That's really special.
Well, you live fairly close to Emily, so all you have to do is ask her.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
We have some unnatural swag. So,
bitchin'.
If you want the unnatural swag, if you want to be mentioned in a future episode, and if you want your case covered, all you have to do is send us a screenshot showing us you've downloaded all of our episodes, and that will come true for you.
A dream is a wish your heart makes.
That was really good.
Thanks.
I didn't realize you were such a great, old-fashioned singer? That's impressive. But in the meantime, be sure to make good choices.
And don't get got.
They noticed that she had been in an on-again, off-again relationship with a guy by the name of Kevin Eastman.
Ugh. Fuck Kevin.
Wait, you don't even know Kevin yet. Ryan, what if Kevin ends up being, what if Kevin ends up being the hero here?
I'm sorry. That was my pre-existing experiences with men named Kevin.
I'm just kidding. You probably should have reacted like that. So,
oh, yes.
So if I ever do get murdered, I don't think my Facebook Messenger is going to help them find my murderer. But although maybe they'll come talking to you. I don't know.
Damn it. Now I'm involved.
Right.
They're like, this is the only person he was talking to.
And they do talk about murder all the time. Whoops.
Now you should just start saving all of your hate mail, just in case.
Maybe I should.
Print it all out, keep a file. These all are suspects.
The killer's still out there, and maybe they know who it is, but they don't have enough evidence.
Or they're probably listening to us fucking now.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe the vending machine serial killer is coming after us at some point.
Don't leave me with that uneasy pause. Good. Cop.
It's just a good thing that you don't go to vending machines. That's your saving grace right there.
I promise this is my last mouthful. I pushed it away from me.
That's what she said. Zinga. I want to read this just because I thought it was funny. She goes, Ryan reminds me of when they bring in a random character into like season 6 of a favorite show you love, and that character saves it from getting canceled. Thank you, Ryan.
Oh, I had no idea where that was going at first. I was like, oh no.
I thought that's so true.
I went on such an emotional roller coaster. I was like, oh no, it's bad news. Oh wait, it's good news.
Well, yeah, because sometimes there's a character that gets introduced into like one of the latter seasons of a show and you're like, oh, fuck this.
Oh my God, Bones. Absolutely, 100%. Really? That show, I remember my mom like yelling at the TV as though she were watching a sport. And she's like, how dare you ruin this show? No, come back.
Baby, come back. Any kind of fool could see.
You can blame it all on me. God. Baby, come back.
I do not want to go back to the audio when I just sang that, because that was some of the most tone deaf singing ever.
Yeah, baby.
Are you intrigued by the dark side of things like murder, kidnapping, and sex cults? What about when the criminal is your favorite musician or actor or director or writer? Hollywood might look like all glitz and glamour until you take a closer look. But I'll tell you one thing, that kind of point of view can make you more vulnerable. From Roman Polanski to Mackenzie Phillips to Judith Barcy to Kurt Cobain, some are predators and some are prey. I'm Dee Dee West, and I just might ruin your childhood. Follow my podcast, Broken Limelight, where I cover celebrity true crime stories. For more information, visit BrokenLimelight.com. Again, that's Broken Limelight. Follow it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts.